Okay, we got another question here. I'm really wondering what Greg said on Crawl Space when they stopped recording. I feel it's almost too long to worry about releasing secret details. Is there a bigger crime ring this is a part of that police are waiting to have enough evidence about to move on? If so, I think her family deserves better if they don't already know.
I don't recall what that
Shout out to Linz for knowing the history of Crawl Space.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It was one of the very first episodes. I think it was like maybe like the second or third episode of Crawl Space.
Was that when I was talking
Space.
About working in Detroit?
No. You were talking about the group of men who may have done something to Brianna and her body.
That story that I didn't tell was... Or I cut off, came from a person that I did an interview with, and you ended up talking to him too. I really wanted Lou to talk to this guy because he had so much detail and he was so confident and blasé about it that I'm thinking, wow, this guy should write novels or something if he's lying to me. You know, I have a pretty good shit detector. I can tell if somebody's lying to me, and But at the same time, you know, when I give it to Lou, like when he first came on board, I'm like, well, read this. But you're not going to believe it. You know, it's just there's too many people involved. It's too much. And so I'll go back. But so Lou takes it and reads it. And we've talked about it periodically. And he's like, there's just too many people involved. And he keeps adding more because he goes on social media and the story expands. A lot of it makes sense. He was living in the area at the time. He did know these people. He claims he has firsthand knowledge of a lot of stuff, but it gets to, again, Occam's razor. He gets just, the whole town's involved by the time he's done. But he told some stuff that was really morbid. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about that shit in front of Bruce or the family or close friends or anything like that. Yeah, it was a story of them taking her, to the farm, and the farm was searched. So is that he knows the story and he's expanding on it? You know, you look for when people start telling you a story, well, they could have heard this in the news, or they could have heard me talk about it, they could have read the newspaper and got this information. So it was kind of expanded on that. So I didn't know if he just took that and built on it. When you talked to him, did he tell you the same story? It was my statement. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Basically stick to the storyline.
The thing is, as you said, every time he tells a story, it gets a little more embellished. And he has one individual warning her outside the store with their mother, which we've been over and over and over. And then that same individual on the other end that night kidnapping her.
No, he said... He said he didn't have anything to do with the actual kidnapping. They brought her, her to him, his house, remember?
No, the latest one, he puts him at the scene, too.
Okay, so he's changed the story.
He's changed the story again. And, in fact, he put the ex-boyfriend at the scene, too.
Okay. So it's changed a lot.
I guess this is why we decided to not move forward with having that actually be on the air. Because
I think we didn't because it got morbid.
It got morbid and disturbing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people named it. I mean, if you believe him... There's like seven or eight people at the scene doing this, which is...
And that sounds really unlikely to you.
Yeah. I mean, they could have a town meeting with that many people up there, you know. So
he went into really gruesome detail.
Yeah, too much detail. If you're not there, you don't have that much detail. You know, people don't come in and get drunk and tell you all these minutiae that he...
It started out good. He started out strong, and he's very convincing when he tells the story, and I'm thinking... Oh man, either this guy's a really good, but then as time went on, he just kept developing on it and developing on it and stuff like
so
that.
So, is it a drug thing with him, or why does he keep changing his story? Yeah.
Well, he did time for some.
Okay.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh
it's
yeah.
It's an attention getter. And I
yeah.
You know.
Is this something that he heard in jail?
No. Like he was up there at the time.
Yeah. So
he's not
just
up there anymore.
So he knew some of the people.
He knew
Brianna
some of the people
knew.
Potentially, and
he's got to get an imagination, I guess.
I don't want to accuse him of wanting like revenge on these people. But he kind
of some of them,
personal,
maybe.
It's possible that he, and I don't know. I'm accusing him of that, but I mean, it's possible. There's things that he was upset about to do with these people, so that it could be an issue.
And then there may be a grain of truth to some of it. because it, some of it is consistent with other things. But it's the problem with these stories. They get legs and you don't know.
He named names. I mean, he said if you talk to this person, he would say things like that, would try to convince you. If you talk to this person, they will tell you they were there and this was this and it was this day and this is what happened. Or people that just saw little things. I mean, this was the story where he said he talked to this girl. She came in the door and she saw Brianna. This was after she was listed as missing. And she said, Brianna, I saw you on the news tonight. People are looking for you. What are you doing here? Things like that. And we talked to her.
He involves his ex-wife's boyfriend. And, I mean, it just gets,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I can't
seems
sit here
a little
and talk.
Personal.
He wouldn't talk to the state police when they were all the
that
way out
that was my
there.
Next question, yeah. So he didn't ever speak to the police about these accounts.
He shut them off after they drove all the way out there to talk to him.
Well, there's a question that you already answered from Lynn's. She asked if there were any phone calls made from the Black Lantern before she left that night, and you've already checked that out. And then she says, with whom did she go karting when she broke her arm? So she went karting.
Yeah.
Go-karting when she broke her arm. How was the medical bill paid and by whom?
Well, she was a minor, obviously. Well, she was under 18. Bruce said he thinks she was on his insurance. He doesn't really recall. I mean, there was nothing nefarious about any of that stuff.
And that was way back in the summertime.
Yeah, and he told me who she was carding with too, and I can't think of the top of my head, but there was nothing nefarious about that stuff. It was taken care of. He goes, I even think the hospital might even have eaten the bill.
What did the wife of the owner of the Black Lantern say Brianna's state was when she left? And was Brianna parked near a dumpster at the inn? She said that would explain the lime.
I think they're trying to explain the lime.
And I guess asking if Brianna was inebriated, I suppose.
You talked to the owner. Did she said she was fine, right?
I talked to the owner's husband.
Okay.
Yeah, there was
no indication.
I thought
the wife, didn't she sit there and watch her drive away out
the
window?
Yeah, she saw her. Yeah. The husband told me the wife was, well, saw her drive away. I don't know if there's a dumpster there or not.
Okay.
You know, when I was in school, when I was that age, I worked at the most popular restaurant in where I live. And all my friends worked there and stuff. And, you know, he started as dishwasher and he went up to busser and then you went up to waiter or whatever, and you know, the place was party madness. The bar was the best place to go and all this stuff. But when we got off work and stuff, if our friends weren't done yet, we went out and hung out by our cars and grabbed beers and stuff like that. And restaurants are notorious for the fact that you can drink there. This restaurant wasn't that way. There wasn't very many people working there. There wasn't very many patrons there. It wasn't that big of a place. But that lime could have, that was my point. The lime could have ended up there. Who
somebody
knows?
Leaving a bar.
Yeah, sitting on the back of the car having a drink or, you know, shooting the shit. But I don't put anything to that.
Or it could have been related. You know, somebody at the scene could have had a corona or, you know.
Yeah, I doubt it. I doubt it's got anything to do with anything.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know we talked about that and we.
Oh, you just go right down the rabbit hole with that.
Well,
you
just said, yeah, it is. Yeah. But you just said corona. But you put the lime in the bottle of Corona, like, and then you aren't able to take it out.
It's hard to get it out.
Yeah. So they would have to have a lime. Like, who's pulling over to the side of the road by this house and firing up, like, gin and tonics and squeezing fresh lime?
Yeah.
You know, if they're, I don't know. It's minutiae.
I got the feeling that if this was anything like my friends in high school, we'd drive up on country roads all over around where we lived, and we'd jump out, open the trunk, blast the music, sit there and drink out of the cooler, shut the trunk, drive off, go to the next stop, meet our friends, drive all over the place. The car was a mess. It was a rolling dumpster. Who knows? It could be anything.
We used to have Bloody Marys, and we used to top ours.
Yeah,
with,
you're drinking dry martinis.
Celery, a nice a nice
crispy bacon.
Nice crispy bacon, and yeah, we'd really do our Bloody Marys up.
You know, interestingly enough, when I first got involved in the case, that lime really struck me as what's a lime doing on a car. I talked to you should call him an acquaintance, who has a pretty good drug history, and asked her, and in order to extract or to make cocaine liquid, you add an acidic, something acid to it.
Yeah.
Lemons, limes. You know, it's not ideal because it's kind of an impurity, but that to make it liquid form to be injected, that's apparently one of the methods. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Why you wouldn't just snort it at that time is...
Possible. Occam's razor.
Occam's razor.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so, to throw that out there anyway for what it's worth. I don't think it's the reason, but, you know, that was an explanation that was given to me. So.
You know, you hear, it's distracting, and you hear stuff that's, like, say, the person getting in the back of the car. You think, yeah, it's reasonable. I mean, she's driving this big old boat that she doesn't lock this car up. There's no way.
And it was just broken into a couple of times.
Yeah, it was broken into, which then
yeah,
you start
30 miles away at a different restaurant.
It happened twice, though. You're just thinking, oh, does this have something to do with it? Is somebody harassing or somebody stop? You know, it gets so it can be distracting, but nothing to do with it. And then there was the thing about you could start her car without a key.
Right.
Which that wasn't unusual when I was
not
young.
Not unusual, right.
I remember my older brothers drove those old beaters, and a lot of times it would happen to the ignition. You just get in and turn the thing.
Yeah. We had a police car like Cruiser like that. One of them was when
it started. The police car. You could steal the police car without a key.
years ago, and the same thing. So, and someone had mentioned somewhere, I've read it, that a friend of hers said you didn't need keys to start her car. So,
well, we had a guy on the – remember initially the maintenance had a website, and they had a chat session every week. So people would get on there and they'd talk. It was usually the same people. And one of the guys that was on that was a regular on there who I didn't particularly care for, he actually said that hey, don't tell. He was talking specifically to another guy, and he said, hey, don't tell anybody, but you could start Brianna's key without, or a car without a key. And I'm like, excuse me? So the guy sent me a screenshot of it. I thought that was really odd. Hey, don't tell anybody. How would he know? He never knew her. Don't tell anybody you can start a car without a key.
I might have heard it from chatting with someone else, one of her closer friends, I guess.
I don't think I'd be telling people, hey, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
But I know something really odd about a girl that's missing.
Some people say that to make it sound more important. Than
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't want to talk about where you learn the information.
He was a really strange guy, too. There was a few real strange people that got involved early on.
Cases like this attract him.
Bruce said he would show up at things, and they were like doing search and stuff, and this guy would show up and he'd have a binder, you know, a foot thick with paperwork and follow him around and stuff. It's bizarre.
So here's one from Tarek. He was on the show a while ago. Shout out, Tarek. So he says, I guess my main question for you guys would be more of a general question, which is, how do you, Greg and Lou, and we the people who care about the family and case, go from here 15 years later knowing what you/we all know?
What is it that we know? It would be my question.
I don't know. He doesn't have a second part.
How are we going to go further?
I wish I knew who did it, but I don't know that we know anything except we have some suspects.
Okay. So what do we do, I guess, then? What can Tarek and the rest of the people who support it and follow this case online
do? Tarek did a pretty good job of getting some news out there to people. I think he was a heavy commenter and stuff like that. He called me. We talked a couple of times. That stuff's always good. Lou and I are going to set up a list here of people that we need to talk to, and there's a few that came up in discussion. We said we really got to talk about where we're going to go from here, from starting now, and just go back and start, you know, knocking on doors, I think, which was nice because when Lou came in, you know, he, like I told you, he was going to recheck what I did, and then he did his own, and it was just nice to have that. Because over time, even people I talked to way back, you know, they'll give you a different story over time, or they'll, you know, have a change of heart or whatever. So that's what we're gonna do, and we're trying to get just more by doing this, more information out there, and you know. Always love to hear from Tarek, what he's got to say and stuff.
Yeah, I think two things that we need to keep in mind. One, the more publicity we get, the more people talk about the case. I mean, we just got a tip last August, so that shows you there's still people that have information
out
there.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
That was huge. And how does that not come up for
14 years, 15 years?
You know, you almost want to slap somebody, you know. Why were you sitting on this? Well, it wasn't intentional on their part.
No, not at all.
You know, they said that this person had the person that gave the statement had come forward.
Is this the same lead that you're – okay.
The other thing I think that people should keep in mind is not to take speculation and repeat it as fact, because that can hurt you. Really, it really can, because now all of a sudden you're getting information that people say is fact when – you know.
Yeah, and you can always ask us questions on Chloe's blog or your
the Brianna pages,
Brianna page, yeah,
or through Crawlspace.
Yeah, and this is a good segue. Chloe herself has some questions and goes right into what you're talking about. She asks, are there other common misconceptions about this case that you'd like to debunk once and for all?
You know, it's really difficult. It is, no matter how much you try to think, have an open mind and all that stuff, it's really difficult to shake things like the drug. Does it have something to do with, does it have something to do with Ryan's and Jackson? That stuff just hits so heavily in your
mind.
And
it's still May.
And it's still May. Yeah, you don't know. But it's hard to get away from stuff like that and try to put your mind on something else. I don't know. What's a misconception?
I'll ask a specific one. Do you give any credence to the theory about there being a man in the back seat of the car, for example, who pops up and forces this accident into the house? And that's sort of a misconception that's out there.
Well, it's how likely.
Yeah,
it would be.
Again, I don't think it's likely. Number one, as Greg indicated earlier, how they get away from the scene. Then?
Yeah,
he didn't whole just walk her down 118.
Yeah, right? The whole object when you're doing that to somebody is to have control over the situation, which you're not going to have. When she's screaming down the road and you pop up, she's going to hit a tree or slam on the brakes.
And then where do you go with her?
Yeah.
So I would say unless there's more people involved and somebody's waiting with a car, and now you're starting to get, you know.
You know, I at one point, and I have it somewhere, it might even be in that package, I went through and I wrote down every possible scenario and why they would and wouldn't be functional. And like you said, there's someone's blocking the road or someone's in front of her. And that was a story I think that came from that witness, was that when she pulled out, they were in front of her and they stopped and the other car came behind her and boxed her in. And there she was. Well, now how many people do you got involved? Then he put there was more than one person in each vehicle and all that other stuff. And then they got to get her out of there and they leave her car. Then it was they were going to take her car. But when he hit the building, he said, "Oh, screw it." And he left the car there.
Or they took the car and they brought it back and hit the building.
Yeah.
There's just so many variations.
And then the overdosing at a party thing was one of the scenarios. And that scenario gets confused by the time frame. So if she leaves at 11:20, her car spotted at 12:30, she's only got so much time there, okay? Whatever has to take place in that time. So the story that he told, which was kind of interesting, alleviated that time frame by saying she was taken from there, but she was held somewhere else and passed away later, a day later or something. It was more than that, actually. So that made sense that she could be somewhere else, and it didn't have to happen in that quick time frame. If you look at where the car is, if you are to believe that she was in the car, I mean, she can only go so far and come back. It has to be a round trip. There's only so many miles she can go. You can draw a circle around it. Because she can only go, what?
We drove from the scene to where the house party supposedly was and back again. And she, you could do it.
Right.
But she would have had to walk in the door and overdose and then jump in the car and have him drop it off.
I mean, if you got an hour and 10-minute time frame there, the farthest she could drive away is 35 minutes and back. And then it was, what did she do? Go to a house party 50 minutes away, walk in, go, you know, open the door and go, "Hey, give me some drugs." Overdose, fall on the ground. Right. And they all go, "Oh, my God, we got to get rid of her." And they take her back to the house. And it has to happen that fast. It just doesn't seem reasonable.
And quick dump her car and somebody else drive and picked up the people that dumped the car.
Yeah. So he alleviated. That was interesting about that. Without knowing it, he alleviated it, having to stick to that tight time frame. But if you sit down and write down each thing that you believe could have happened, you can figure out how many people would have to be necessary to have it and how likely it would be. And it's just not that likely.
And the thing about that, too, is you get a story and you show that that's not plausible. And the next thing you know, you've got a spinoff of that story that makes it a little more possible.
Yeah.
And then when you find that, you shoot that down. Now it changes a little bit more.
Trying to make it fit.
Yeah.
You know, how can I make this work?
Instead of the facts fit and the solution, you get a solution, then you try and make the facts fit it, you know.
Okay, here's another one from Chloe. She says, there has been some talk about a connection between Brianna and missing Nate Curry. This was alluded to by a journalist. Can you guys comment on whether any connection between the two has been reported to you or to law enforcement?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that journalist, he has my phone number. I believe, and he knows who he is. He's listening. He can text me or call me, but I've never heard that. We've never heard that Brianna knew Nate in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and if you're not familiar with, are you familiar with Nate?
Yeah.
I mean, I was trying to think of that.
And when that was first stated by the individual, I think I looked into it a little bit, and he had said there was a connection between the two, and
I just don't think there
nobody
is.
Yeah. ever heard of this guy in her circle.
Okay.
So,
I mean, it's odd when you look at it from our point of view that, well, it's kind of like looking at Maura. Okay, she's 90 miles away, car left by the side of the road, she's gone. Superficially, because his was that way. His car was found by the side of the road. Ah. He's gone. You know what I mean? So it looks like, oh, does this have something to do with this?
Similar MO.
In such a place that's so sparsely populated, people go missing an awful lot.
Well, yeah. Look at Collins, Legia Collins.
I mean, yeah.
2 months, 3 months later.
Yeah.
That's one thing that we haven't touched on is maybe you want to comment on it. You know more about it than I do, is the Ducharme affidavit.
So Alan Ducharme, when Ryan's left after he was interviewed by the police and stuff like that, and after the Reservoir Road raid, you know, him and his friends are up there, and they're realizing, oh, my, everyone is looking at us, everyone. So not a good place to sell drugs anymore. So Jackson leaves the state. He comes back into the state periodically, probably still does, because he has kids spread out across the state, doesn't he?
A few,
yeah, randomly. And Ryan's goes down to Burlington and sets up shop, which I think that's where his stuff was coming from anyway. It was kind of part of his pipeline. But he lives with this girl named Legia Collins. Legia is running crack around to different people and selling it for him. She goes down to Alan Ducharme's house. Alan is on a bender, and she ends up hitting Legia over the head with a baseball bat. It's a really graphic story. So Legia goes missing.
Just to put the time frame in context, this is July 4th of that same year, 2004.
Same year. So you're looking from March 19th to?
July 4th.
July 4th. Okay. So Ramon Ryans goes in to the Burlington Police Department and reports Legia missing. Knows that she was at Alan's house. Actually goes to Alan's house and inquires about her. So they start looking at Ellen, and it doesn't take long for them to put two and two together and realize that Ellen had killed her. The story that Ellen tells, once all is said and done and she's arrested, and she ends up talking with the Burlington police. She has a bunch of interviews before they finally won't let her leave. She says that Legia came into the house. Their argument had to do with a gun, and that the gun was her boyfriend's, Moses, I believe, Moses Robart. That was his gun. And then she let Ryan's borrow it, and that she wanted it back, and that Legia was giving a hard time and laughing about it, and that she was insinuating that Ryan's had used the gun to do with Brianna, and that Ellen felt that she was somehow going to be mixed up in this crime. She ends up beating Legia over the head with a baseball bat. Really horrific crime, throws her down the stairs. She's still alive, laying at the bottom of her cellar stairs. Robar, and I had this wrong too in the earlier podcast. I had thought Robar had been pulled over in a traffic stop because they were looking for him to question him when they were questioning Ellen, and he shot himself. That's not true. He was at work. He was at a roofing company, and he was on break, and he was sitting at the end of his truck. You know, his lunch pail open and stuff, and the police came around from every different direction and surrounded him. He pulled out a gun and shot himself. So
that's a misconception, that he was in his truck and
right,
shot
yeah.
himself? Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
That's always been
he
the story.
He was at his truck, but he wasn't driving.
No, he wasn't driving. He was just sitting there eating or something.
Okay.
Taking a break. So Ellen pleads. She doesn't have a trial, and she goes to prison. She's still in prison. At some point, the police go to her sister's house, Debbie, and is going to arrest her son on some petty charge. And she freaks out. And she just loses it. And she says, if you take my son, I won't tell you what happened to Brianna Maitland. And she gives this statement. And the statement's pretty detailed and pretty morbid. And, you know, it's hard to believe that, again, somebody's making this up off the cuff. about something that happened in the past that doesn't live anywhere near her. It's not like it's her local news or anything like that, which is really strange. So when you go and you get the records for the court records for Ellen, and there's, you know, records as to do with her court proceedings, she says that the issue was about a gun, and the judge is arguing. The judge actually says, no, it's not. It's about cocaine. And she says, no, it's about a gun. He shuts her down.
That's the transcript, too.
If I was the judge, I would say, oh, wait a minute. What's this about a gun? Why don't you tell me about that? Well, I think he was privy to it, and that's why he did it. Because if you go back to other records and look at her when she's being interviewed by the police, she says that this was all about a gun. It had nothing to do with the fact that she was on a bender and wanted cocaine and was going to rob the person of cocaine that came to her house. And this all seemed like a great idea. She literally was on a bender. If you read what she had ingested over the past like 4 or 5 days, it was incredible.
Take down a bowl.
Yeah. So she tells a story about Brianna. And you read the story and you think, oh, my God, there you go. Here we are, you know. Well, she tells 3 other stories, too. So you say, no, that's not what happened, is it? And then she tells a different story. So then you're back to square one where she's throwing stuff at the wall, see if it'll stick. That's the impression you get anyway.
Yeah. Again, that's the frustrating part about all this. You get something that looks like it's really hot, and you follow up, and all of a sudden, at the end of it, you're no further along than you were before. And that's why when people think the police are taking a long time, they deal with this all the time. I mean, they've got
misinformation, and rumors and lies.
People that get arrested, they want to make a deal. They give them false information. You're chasing ghosts, and it's, you know.
We had a tip come one time out of a jail, and Bruce sent it to me. He said, look it over and tell me what you think, and I'm going to have you work on it and stuff. And I'm reading through it, and it was this man. He said, well, I'm in jail with so-and-so, and he named him and everything. And I looked into him, and I kept an eye on him for a while, actually. And he told this whole story, and it sounded all convincing and everything like that. And you flip the page and get to where his signature is, and he signed it like, Super Master Chief of the, you know, solar system kind of thing. And you're like, oh, man, here we go.
Is this the jail cell one?
He just was a kook.
Yeah.
He signed it like, you know, something crazy, and then he had little doodles, and
they're in jail and they're bored.
So Chloe also asked, does investigating unidentified Jane Does play a role in your investigations, or in your investigation?
I used to go on the Doe Network all the time. Yeah. Well, I'd go on periodically and look through it and see what was new, because I was familiar with everything that was on there, and is, you know, and then they would update. Didn't something just come up about that?
A couple days ago.
Yeah.
I forwarded it up to Vermont anyways, but I don't think it's, I mean, it had to do with some bones that were found out in Florida, but it was like a month after, and the rate of decomposition was such that I don't think it could have been her. But.
And that comes up periodically where, what was that? Do you remember when the Asian female skull was found, and I can't remember what town it was found in? That's going back a few years. People jumped all over that and just went apeshit. And
every time you see body found in Vermont, you get 6.
Yeah. So wait until you see, you know, you go up through Vermont. Some of the cemeteries you see are amazing. I'll pull out the side of the road and just walk through the cemetery to look at, because it's interesting to see how old they are and everything. But, you know, with a storm or something like that in a part of the country like that, that can happen. Yeah. So just wait to see what the police release. If they release and say, yeah, you know, this is... If it meets the criteria, you're going to know.
Interestingly, though, the Jane Doe is one of the ways I got involved in this originally. Because we had, in my town, an unsolved back from the 70s. It was never identified female. So it was one of those things. Every once in a while, you get a tip, and you look into it, and it turned out to be nothing. But that's how I got familiar with the Jane Doe Network. And then when Brianna came up, of course, it was just natural that I... having ties up in Vermont that I was curious about it and everything. So, and shelved it, you know, because I was working. But after I retired, I was thinking, geez, it's never been solved. And it's too bad, you know, you have so many unidentified bodies out there, so many unsolved, that they do a great work matching things up. But.
Now, we know that Bruce has tried to, utilize the connections he's made, his experience in all this, and he founded Private Investigations for the Missing. What's your feelings on that organization, that nonprofit, and how do you feel like your work can contribute, and how do you feel like the community can support Private Investigations for the Missing? This is also a Chloe question.
Well, we're in the stage right now, the fundraising stage, so... You know, for years, Bruce and I talked about it. We should really do this. We should really do this because nobody can afford it. I mean, Bruce couldn't have afforded to hire somebody full time. Everything that I've done, I did by just he paid my expenses. And so he said, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to. And he's really excited about it. He went through the process. He got nonprofit status. And so we're trying to raise money. So we want your money. Just send us money.
Yeah, no, really. Oh, no,
anything
no,
you
yeah,
got.
That's it. There's a GoFundMe account that's attached to it. If people go to investigationsforthemissing.org, you can donate directly on that website by just clicking the Donate Here button. And what does that money go towards?
Well, it's going to go towards providing investigations for families of missing people. Right now, I'm the only one on board. But we're hoping that's going to change. Once we get rolling, we can have other people on board.
You're the only private investigator on board.
Yeah, they're going to start with me.
Good.
So I'm actually going to leave my business and go to work doing that. But we have to meet a certain amount of money before we can start doing it and do it right. So I'm willing to base jump off the Hancock Building in Boston to raise money.
Well, you could probably arrange that. I mean,
what it needs is GoFundMe is great, but it's not going to fund it. What it needs is corporate sponsorship.
Right. It needs grants and corporate sponsorship.
And it needs...
which we're working on.
Yeah. It needs someone who with expertise in the fundraising area, you know, that would volunteer their time and everything. You know, it's a great idea, though, because, you know, we know about Mara. We know about... Brianna, we know about Molly Bish, we know about Holly Peranian. They're all pretty middle class white girls, you know, and there's thousands of cases like this across the country with that don't have the notoriety that these do, you know. No, whether the family doesn't have the resources or whatever. So, you know, these cases are expensive. I mean, I have put nowhere near the hours that. Greg has put in this by any means, but I put in a lot.
And you've put in a lot of hours on other cases just by being a law enforcement.
Yeah.
So you know what it takes.
Yeah. And especially this because when you're in a public agency, you've got a lot of resources at your hand. You've got other agencies, you got records checks, you got the FBI, you got other agencies to call on, you got manpower. Greg's by himself. You know, anything we do, we have to do on our own. If it's computer searches, you got to pay for those. I've probably racked up on his case $500, $600 worth of computer search alone.
Yeah.
That I don't charge them for. I mean, I've done this all gratis, and I don't want anything for it. But if you had to pay for these services, they just couldn't afford it.
It's amazing. You know, you realize when you go, like if we go up to Vermont for 2 days or something, you're talking gas, food.
Hotel,
incidentals. It just boom, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
You can go up there for a weekend to do a boots on the ground search, a couple interviews, and some really peripheral type, you know, just like scouting of the area. And you can come back and say, oh, I didn't realize that cost $1,200.
Oh, you guys must, when you were going up, driving up Thrace to watch your show when you guys did, you must have spent a fortune.
Yeah.
How much you spend when you went up to Canada?
Oh, that overall, that was at least I would say about a $3,000.
Jeez. Yeah, there were some flights involved.
Flights, hotels, gas, car rental.
The cheapest one was when they got lost.
When we got stranded?
Yeah. That was the first podcast I saw these guys. I said, you know, I told somebody, I said, I'm not really impressed.
You know what?
I mean, they don't know where they're going. Yeah. They go on a road that's closed in the middle of wintertime.
There was no sign saying that.
To have somebody with you that doesn't want to get lost and says, guys, turn around.
If those people had left a half hour early, you guys would still be up there, you know.
Yes. Oh, if they... a half hour?
Yeah, forever grateful to them.
They were on their way out of the driveway. Like they were.
Yeah,
they were
and the next scene is you're sitting in their house like having cocoa or something.
Yeah, we're drinking beers with them. Oh,
yeah, we had a few beers waiting for the tow truck. Yeah.
Oh, my
and
God.
Thank goodness the tow truck had some extra rope,
extra
too.
Rope, because it would have been like a $1,500 charge to get like a special tractor down there to get us out.
It wouldn't have happened that night either.
Right.
It was like a Sunday night, and it was already dark.
If we had been 301 feet out. We wouldn't have been able to do it.
He had the entire chain or the entire like rope on the tow truck, and then he had an additional rope, and then I believe he tied like
a shit show.
like a shirt or something like that.
It was well, I made the joke about it, how I would just strip down and tie my clothes to it, yeah. Or I would just hang on, like back up.
It'd be like the hitcher.
But
only in Vermont would they not put a sign up saying road closed.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
It was his regular.
We didn't know that
right.
That road was so deep. It was like 3 or 4 feet deep of snow, and. We had no idea.
Yeah. It was his regular cable coming off his tow truck to a chain to then a rope that, I'm not kidding, it was, there was
oh,
maybe
we made
a foot
it by a few
of,
foot.
Yeah, it
yeah.
was like a foot
oh
of slack.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that thing
is
started
some
moving.
Of those,
it was the greatest moment.
If you're not accustomed to living that way, it really is a different, when you're up that far north and there's not many people around you. You're just not used to it.
Yeah, we didn't know which way to go. We did not know we couldn't go that way.
And there's no cell phone service, so we got the GPS coordinates through our phone, which was still active, but
it didn't account for roads being closed due to weather, which is why we got...
And now it's mud season up there, so you just as apt to get stuck in the mud as you are in the snow.
And it was so funny, because Chloe had later told Katie, you know, we screwed up, we went down this road, we shouldn't, and we missed the vigil.
Laughing at you.
And she was like, what is wrong with you guys? You shouldn't... She was like, you actually tried to drive through the mountain, like through the pass there?
Yeah. There's one pass going, I can't remember, the Smuggler's Notch,
yes.
Isn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
have you driven that one?
No.
You're not supposed to drive 18-wheelers and stuff through there.
Or
you
buses.
Can't.
It's illegal.
Watch their news.
They get stuck.
It's 2-3 times a year. There's an 18-wheeler there in some road, and he's just crammed right in. And of course, all the people show up to help, and they're like, what are you doing?
How many times?
There's
many
a
times?
Huge fine now for doing that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, because they can't make it. It's so windy, and there's boulders, and they just can't negotiate that.
And
tight
they don't want to back out, so they keep trying it, and then they get in
then
tighter and tighter and tighter.
Yeah, you've gone too far at that point.
I just remember that moment, looking at that hill, which was snow-covered, and we were like, oh, that's just a little snow over the pavement.
I specifically said, go for it.
Yeah.
I specifically was like, yeah, you got it.
And little did we know, like, the snow was actually over the guardrail. Like, it was that deep of snow that we were driving into.
Yeah.
How far was this house away from that?
Not far. Not far. Well, it was
the house that we ended up hanging out at
feet.
Was very close.
But it's the only house.
There might have been. There was a couple other ones, but one of them had like a hermit, and it was like a deaf guy.
And he was like 90.
Yeah, who
he
like,
said
he
they
was,
never would answer the
he
door.
He was not going to answer the
yeah,
door.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really would have been in deep trouble.
Yeah,
I don't know what we would have done.
When we drove out to get cell phone service with the couple, we looked at the houses going out there and coming back, and none of them had lights on. We would have been in deep trouble. I want to get back to. Private investigations for the missing. There's a chance that they will have a presence at CrimeCon 2019 in New Orleans this year. That's part of the fundraising effort that Bruce is trying to get some funds to get you, Greg, to go down there.
Yeah.
He is going to make an appearance.
I'm
going to
be there.
You're
going to
be there,
sure, and you're going to be there, and we're going to do something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we'll do a live show, or we'll try to get on a panel.
Yep.
And then. Bruce is going to have a vendor booth, which I thought I was going to be doing, but he wants to go, so he's going to be doing a vendor booth, I think.
But people can come down and check out Bruce Maitland, you, Private Investigations for the Missing.
Yeah. You know what? We do want people to give. And we have the form that we can give you that's the tax sheet, so it's a tax write-off. So you help us out that way. And, yeah, we do need corporate sponsorship, but we want to get the ball rolling. Everything helps. That's what we're going to be looking for. You know, this is all new to Bruce. But he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
And he's got some other things on the fire. But and he just today was telling me that he's got somebody that he might get on board that all they do is raise money for nonprofits. So that'd be very cool.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, it's really commendable of him in light of the fact that it's his daughter to want to help others, knowing that it's – I mean, I think – don't want to say we've run the string as far as we can, but we're doing the best we can. But this organization is not going to help him out any. It's going to help other people out.
Yeah, and he wouldn't take the funds from this towards Brianna's. It's not meant for that. Right. You know, we've talked about this. Had we worked this full time from day one, different story. Be a whole different story. Be a whole different ball game. But we couldn't. Bruce couldn't afford it. We've got to work regular jobs. Is what it is. How? Just out of curiosity, give us a ballpark of what you charge an hour.
It depends on who it is and what I'm doing, but it'd be about $100 an hour usually.
About $100 an hour. Guys charge, and if you get in a metropolitan area, you're talking $300 an hour.
Anywhere expenses. 100 to 300, yeah.
Yep.
But it's not just that. Expenses rack up fast.
Huge.
And, like I said, I subscribe to a computer program, but every check you got to pay for, and it amounts up quick. I mean, it's yesterday, I think, just helping out Chloe with the Lawson case, I ran three checks for her.
Think about an average couple having to pay that every week. This will take care of everything for someone. And if I had been able to do this full time and just knock on doors from day one, whole different ball game.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And everything starts from somewhere. There's a lot of work that will go into raising enough money to make this happen, but this is how those great organizations start. For example, Namus. That started from
some guy's basement, right?
Yeah. Before the internet was big.
Yeah. Before I won't base jump. I'll do some stunt, though. I'll go stay in an abandoned psychiatric ward or something.
What? No, you know what? We should do something where we get a psychic on. You join us. People can pay money for tickets to watch you and a psychic.
I'll challenge any psychic to come sit where Lou is across from me, and I will slaughter them. I will absolutely slaughter them.
And tickets are on sale now.